Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Save big money on your summer project at Menards. Transform your garage with rock-solid floor coatings. Complete your project with a showroom-quality finish in 1 weekend. A one-car kit covers up to 250 square feet. Get everything you need to complete your project with rock-solid floor coatings. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you here on this Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget, Game 2, World Series tonight, presented by Gary Force Acura, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. See if the Rays can get back in this series, as the Dodgers took Game 1 last night in a convincing fashion. Game 2, first pitch at 7:08. Where? How did they come up with that time? No idea. But 7:08 p.m. Central Time, and you can hear everything right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Alabama and Tennessee square off this weekend. Longtime voice of Alabama is on the line with us. Friend of the show, Eli Gold. Eli, how the heck are you?
I am well, gentlemen, Darren. Good to be with you.
Yeah, it's been a while, and thanks for the shot right out of the gates. That's good.
Oh,
I like it.
It.
Friendly fire.
Everything good? Everyone staying healthy?
Yeah, everybody's good. How about you? This has been an odd 2020 sports year, right? How has it been for you thus far?
It's been bizarre and difficult, and you know, obviously, I've lost a lot of events that I would normally have broadcast and been compensated for, so that was not pleasant. And obviously recently with we didn't know at the time that it was a false positive for Coach Saban when he tested positive for COVID, as did our director of athletics. Well, you know, then my family was all over me to go get that swab stuck up towards my brain through my nose, and I went and got the COVID test, and thank God I was negative. And of course now we know that those guys had, you know, the negative, they were false positives. But, yeah, it's been unusual, but it's been nice to get back and cover some football. And, you know, minor league hockey supposed to restart here in Birmingham right around Christmas. So hopefully the workload will start intensifying here.
Eli, we've had a couple major league baseball players on the show the last couple of days, and I asked him about, you know, the no fans in the stands, and now they've started to here at the end, obviously let some fans in, but kind of going through the season and the first round of the playoffs with no fans. And they said, look, you understand you have to do what you have to do to get through it, but they hope they never, ever have to do that again. You're used to calling Alabama games in these massive stadiums, packed houses, loud crowds, incredible atmospheres. And yes, there's fans in the stands, but how weird has it been? Because obviously you know it's a lot quieter than normal.
Yeah, but
usually.
You want to know something? And maybe, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm in my mid-60s and I'm able to adjust. I don't know. For the first couple of games, and I don't even think about it now, the first couple of games, Bama played in Columbia, Missouri, and I forget, it was like 11,000 was the COVID regulated capacity, and then Bama played a home game in front of 19,424. I'll be honest to goodness with you, I didn't realize it. Once you started the broadcast and you immersed yourself in the job at hand, in doing the play-by-play and making sure you get your commercials in, this, that, and the other, I did not even realize that there was a lesser crowd on hand. And I say lesser, you know, numbers-wise. And in that first game at Mizzou, it was in the fourth quarter, and we were in the middle of a commercial break, and I leaned back and I said, geez, you know, I forgot that there was nobody here. And it's not affected me. I've been able to generate my own energy, as my crew has, through the broadcast. You just don't even have time to think about it. I don't know how the players have reacted. I mean, you'd much rather have folks there. Don't get me wrong. You want that support. But it really has not been that much of a factor for me. And, of course, you know, you go in, there's no traffic. You leave, there's no traffic. You'd rather have the crowd there. But, you know, it's really been strange. And maybe, again, because I'm a bit of an older, I'm not old, but I'm older, maybe I'm just, you know, able to put all of that out of my brain and just immerse myself in my job at hand. I just don't think about it.
Interesting. That's a different perspective. I would not have thought that to be your answer. All those people turning around during commercial breaks and going, Eli, I have signed my program. No, you don't, you know, that's going
on. We don't have that in our stadium, the way it's laid out. That's never been something that goes on. And, you know, I there's been the way they dress the building, and that, for those who don't know the term, the way they place the fans around the stadium, there is still enough of a murmur. We've had the option. We have always been presented the option on our network to patch into that crowd noise loop that the TV networks have. And we opted against it. We probably run our crowd noise effects feed a little bit louder than we normally do. But, you know, there's enough of a murmur in my headset from the 11 or 12,000 or whatever the, you know, the stated capacity is. It really hasn't affected me. And in some instances, literally, honest to goodness, when I start doing the game, I don't even realize who all is there.
Hmm. Speaking with Eli Gold, voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide. So when we were just talking about Alabama right before we ended the last hour, and a little bit different circumstances right now, all the praise going towards how effective the offense has been and the defense, not your typical Alabama defense. So how big of a concern? I know it can't be that big of a concern when you're scoring at will like they are offensively, but how big of a concern moving forward about the defense getting better?
I don't think the word is concern. I'm curious to see how they improve. It's a very, very good, talented defense. In many areas, though, it is very young. And, you know, the more you go through the season, the better you're going to get. The more practices, you know, you got to remember that this young secondary, and again, it's not totally young, but there's enough youth in there to be able to call it young. This young secondary, every single day, is practicing against arguably one of the most explosive offenses in America. So you will get better in practice, let alone on Saturdays. So, you know, I was encouraged the way things went last week. Of course, you know, Dylan Moses had gone over a year without playing it down. It took him a while to get back into shape and into, you know, playing shape and what have you. I thought he had a spectacular second half against Georgia this past weekend. But you're right, when you have the type of offense that Alabama has, even losing Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs III and Tua and all of this, even losing those guys, to come back and have the offense that Bama does, it's got to give everybody a little comfort level there, knowing that you're going to score 35 or 40 points a ball game.
Talking to Eli Gold, the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide. Eli, great to talk to you. I would love to get your insight on Mac Jones, because it's interesting. It can't ever be easy to be thrust into the position he was last year to replace Tua. But I'm curious how much you think the experience he got last year is leading to his success this year.
Oh, there's no question it is. The been there and done that factor, the practices, the time with the coaches, the time going over the playbook, the whole bit. You know, and let's go back and look. I know you in sports, obviously, we can't take away the wouldas, the shouldas, the couldas. But for the discussion's sake on this show today, you take away those two interceptions against Auburn, which were both pick sixes. Well, then he played a darn good ball game, taking those two plays away and wins the game without giving up those 14 points. Then he comes back and he plays a very solid game against Michigan. He is in the bowl game. He is a very smart, heady kid. And I had a conversation with Coach Saban on the air, a week or two ago. And he said, you know, this is what we saw when we recruited the kid out of bowl school down in Jacksonville, Florida. You know, people, you know, Nick Saban doesn't recruit and give scholarships to quarterbacks just because they're, you know, they got nice families or they're good-looking guys. You know, you got to earn it. And he knew, well, and here's a guy who was so confident in his own ability that he still came to the university when Tua came and knew that, you know, I'm going to be patient and I'm going to get my opportunity. So he doesn't make mistakes. Obviously, we have learned his passing has got pinpoint accuracy. He may not be the fastest quarterback on two legs, but it's all right. You hand off to great runners and you throw to a triumvirate of outstanding wide receivers and a couple of really good tight ends. He doesn't always have to run. So he's really done a very, very good job. The kids love him. The team loves him. And he's just a good young man. It's nice to see.
I love that story of sticking it out, even though he knew he was going to be around a lot of talented quarterbacks. And I would imagine, and as you know, Eli, you get asked about this all the time, just like Nick Saban does. At Alabama, where you know you're with the very, very best, it's not uncommon for somebody to say, well, I took my shot. I'm not quite good enough. I got to go somewhere else because I think I can play. And now that everything seems to be moving towards you get one free transfer without sitting out anyway. So it's great to have success stories of people that do stick it out and wait for the opportunity.
It really is. It's that's something that, again, the coach and I talked about on the air, you know, talking about guys who have left their teammates and just gone on elsewhere. And the coach that I just love when somebody says, I'm here, I'm staying, I'm confident. You know, he also talked about recruiting. And this story goes back probably a season or so ago. He said, I always laugh at these coaches who tell this kid, he goes, you know, you don't want to go to Alabama because you're not going to play right now. So you're basically telling the kid, you're not good enough. You're not good enough to play at Alabama, so come to my school. And, you know, what kind of sense does that make? And Nick said, I love when I hear that. The guys, you know, and of course, for the record, Alabama plays as many, if not more, freshmen than most schools do because they lose so many to the NFL and they genuinely do play a ton of young kids. He said, but I love it when the guys say, and then I had an offensive lineman who said to me a few years ago, and you would recognize the name, but it's immaterial. He said, you know, I got recruited by every, and he did. He was very, 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 very good, recruited by everybody. He said, and I'd go to this school, and they'd say, and look, we want you to come here and help us beat Alabama. Then he'd go to the next school, and they'd say, and we want you to come here because, you know, we want you to help us beat Alabama. And he'd go to the next school and the same thing. And finally the kid said, well, heck, he said, why don't I just go to Alabama? Because every game apparently is the biggest game of the year for somebody. And he picked Alabama. So, you know, the recruiting is a science, but yeah, Nick Saban is able to convince these young men to come, and they buy into the program. And you know what, guys? It's probably no different than in the old days when John Wooden was coaching at UCLA. You know, who wouldn't want to play for John Wooden and be on a team that had a chance to win the national championship every year, had so many of their games on national television? You know, you're never going to get the guy. Nick Saban's never going to get the kid who grew up in East Lansing and prayed to be able to pull that green and white Spartans jersey over his head. You're never going to get that guy. But otherwise, who wouldn't want to at least take a good, long, hard look at Alabama as they did back in the Hoops days with John Wooden out in Westwood?
He's the great Eli Gold here with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase talking Alabama. So when I'm always curious of just kind of the psychology and the relationships that Coach Saban has with his assistants, and you see so many that are scattered about college football now as head coaches, and we all know the record that he has against them. But when any coach hires an assistant, they're not hiring them to say, yeah, I'm going to make you into a great head coach. They're hiring them to help make their team better. But from your eyes, how does he mentor them for them to achieve their goals later on when they leave Alabama?
It's not so much how he mentors them. It's how much do they absorb because they want to. You know, you got to be a sponge and absorb. I mean, you're going to get arguments, but, you know, clearly Nick Saban is one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest. You know, you're going to get arguments from others, but he clearly is one of the very best coaches. If you're working for him and you're not absorbing every last little bit of minutia that you can, you know, that's your fault. He'll show you how it's done. He'll teach you the process, but it's really up to you to take it all in. And, you know, you're going to work every day from 6 in the morning until 10 o'clock at night. It's not easy, but, you know, look how many guys have coached here. They've gone away. They've come back to Alabama for a myriad of reasons. Well, it can't be that bad of a place to work as long as you're willing to put in the hours. So, you know, he doesn't hold back. If that's your question, he'll mentor by, you know, exposing every element of the process to these guys. I mean, look at Jeremy Pruitt. I was talking with the broadcaster at Tennessee, Bob Kessling, who's a dear friend of mine, and, you know, how everything that Jeremy does leading up to a ball game is exactly how Nick Saban does it, even to the point where, you know, Coach Saban and I tape his pregame show 2 hours before kickoff. Well, we never did that with any other coach. You'd always tape the pregame show on Friday sometime. Nick Saban, 2 hours before kickoff. And I talked to Kessling, and he says, you know what? He said, we're now taping our pregame show 2 hours before kickoff. He said, we never used to do that. So it's up to the, you know, the coach will open the book to you. He'll tell you and teach you the process, but it's really up to you to want to learn it.
What have been your impressions just from afar of Jeremy and the job he's done now in his third year at Tennessee?
Yeah, I think he's coming along nicely. I like Jeremy personally. He's a great guy. And, you know, it's there are issues, clearly. There's some recruiting stuff that needs to be done. And I think, you know, everybody knows that. But he's a good coach. He is a good man. And given the time, and obviously having extended his contract, it looks like Coach Fulmer is willing to give him the time. So I think they will do very, very well over the years. He's a good guy, a very keen football mind, and I do wish him the best, with the exception of the third or fourth Saturdays of October.
Absolutely. But before we let you go, it coming out that Tua is going to get his first NFL start, you obviously saw his entire career there at Alabama, the ups and the downs. But what did you make of that news that as a rookie he's gonna give it a go as the starter for the Miami Dolphins?
Well, I was thrilled for him. I mean, you can't imagine how nice of a young man he is and how wonderful his family is. I don't tend to get close to a lot of kids' parents and stuff. You meet them, but you couldn't help get close to Galu and Diane Tongovaloa, the way they raised the family. Tua and his brother Talia, who we obviously knew before he transferred on to Maryland. We're thrilled here. It's funny you bring this up because right, literally just before I was on with you guys, I was on with a radio station in Honolulu. It was their morning show. But it was that's the great thing. It was their morning show, but we were doing it like at 12:30 our time, right. which was very comfortable to do. But he was telling me, Bobby Curran was the host, who is the voice of the University of Hawaii, and he was telling me how the islands are just ecstatic that Tua is going to be starting come a couple of weeks from now. So we're thrilled, and you know, you look at what he did the other day. You know the story. He sits out there on the 15-yard line and FaceTimes with his parents because they couldn't be at the game, and he wanted them to be part of what had gone on. It doesn't get any better than that. If it was a Hollywood script, somebody would probably reject it. But it's real. So I'm thrilled for him, and he's good. The guy, you know, he'll have growing pains, no question. But even that the one play, the rollout and the throw out of the end zone the other day, that was not an easy play to make. And he did it. Made it look effortless and completed a couple of passes. So I'm thrilled for him. And again, you know, it wasn't far from, hey, you'll never play football again. And now all of a sudden he's not only playing football, he's going to be starting in the NFL. It's a wonderful, heartwarming story. It really is.
A couple weeks ago, we were visiting Lauren's family, and everybody was gathered on a Sunday morning, and you know her family, what side they tend to root for. Some people in the room disappeared, Eli, her brother and his wife and others. They came back out in full Miami Dolphins getup and said they were getting ready to leave to go watch the Dolphins game. I suspect there's probably a lot of Dolphins merch being sold in Tuscaloosa.
Oh, there is. I mean, we've seen a lot of the teal-colored number one jerseys. I mean, it's really – and I saw some number – that the NFL put out about how many, you know, gazillion dollars of merchandise of Tua's that they have already sold. But, yes, it's all over the place. We're starting to see more and more Dolphins games on our local TV here because, obviously, we don't have, like you guys have the Titans, obviously, we don't have a home team per se. And usually we will see a Saints game or a Falcons game. But now we're starting to see Dolphins games, and it's a wonderful story, and everybody is thrilled for him, and it'll be nice to see. I didn't expect it mid-season like this. I didn't expect it necessarily mid-season like this. But when you stop and think, they got the bye week coming and all of that. Maybe it makes sense. And either way, I look forward to seeing him on the field in a couple weeks.
No doubt about it. Always enjoy the visits. You continue to be safe. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk down the road.
Great, and thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
All right, that is Eli Gold, longtime voice of Alabama, and, of course, Crimson Tide and the Vols will do battle this weekend. We'll come back with more. We'll hear a little bit of what Mike Vrabel had to say today in preparation for their matchup against the undefeated Steelers this weekend at Nissan Stadium. But first, I want to talk to you about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. And I've been talking about them for years because I've been going there for years, and I know a lot of you have been going there as well. They've been in this market since 2007. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge, the board-certified physician over there, and his wife Daphne, the registered nurse, and their experienced staff want to improve your quality of life. And I suspect as we all get older, you want that like I do. And they do so many things under one roof. And if you have a, if you've been feeling a little bit off lately, haven't felt like yourself, really haven't had a lot of get up, I wonder why you're a little sluggish, well, go over there and talk to them about maybe hormone replacement therapy. Get your levels checked and see, because that tends to go down, your numbers over the years, your levels, and they have ways to improve that. Face and body rejuvenation, weight loss management, which is something big in 2020. We get it. Everybody's been kind of out of their normal routines. Maybe you put on some unwanted pounds and you would like to shed those. Well, they've got people and programs that can get you headed in the right direction. If you need to schedule an appointment or a consultation with those folks over there, dial this number, 615-283-7291. That's 283-7291. Or you can always learn everything about them by going to their website, coolspringsmd.com. Thank you, David. We happen to agree. Mike Vrabel, Titans head coach, spoke with the media today in preparation for their big tilt against the Pittsburgh Steelers Sunday at noon at Nissan Stadium. Any of our press conferences that you hear on this show or ESPN 102.5 The Game is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Here's Mike Vrabel.
Mike, this is going to be only the eighth time in NFL history that teams undefeated meet this late in the season. You've played in a couple of those games. What can this kind of a showdown at this point of the season reveal about your team? Can it help your team maybe, you know, step up its pace, so to speak? What's the challenge of this kind of game?
Just playing a good opponent. I would say the records don't mean anything in this league. I know that we're not caught up in that. You know, every week is a huge challenge. This one, unbelievably so. Very well-coached football team, physical football team. You know, very good defense. Very efficient in, you know, just their operation on offense, you know, is critical. There's so many guys that, you know, I think there's five guys that have, you know, at least 25 targets. So Ben's doing what really good quarterbacks do, which is, you know, find the guy that's open and get him the football. You know, they're able to run it and control the tempo of the game. So I don't think that the records are going to mean anything in this game. What we have to focus on is preparation and then execution.
Mike, I know Adoree going on the designated for return list is just a part of the process. What do you look for when a guy starts practicing again to know when he's ready, and how do you like the progress he's made?
Well, again, haven't seen too much of him just because – been, you know, the kind of in the return to play. You know, Buck could fill us in on how he's been looking over there. So we'll see where he's at practice-wise, see what his stamina looks like, see how he responds. The biggest thing is how they respond from practice is how they feel the next day.
Hey, Coach, you had mentioned a little bit about the Steelers' offense, and they're kind of known for bringing in these wide receivers, and they've had success over the years, specifically this year with Chase Claypool. What do you see out of this guy that has made him so dangerous this season?
Well, there's a player we evaluated coming out. He's a smart football player. You know, they do a lot with him for being a rookie. Plays in the kicking game, is a good player there. It's been a gunner for him. He's played all over the place on kickoff. You know, he's got really good size, good speed. Doesn't seem like the game is too fast for him or too big. And so, you know, they've handed it to him, thrown shots with him, double moves with him. You know, took a slant and ran past the safety, broke a tackle against the Eagles. So he's a big play threat who, you know, is all around. Looks to be you know, a very good football player.
Now, Mike, I was going to ask you about Jeffrey first. I guess, you know, through five games here, how much difference do you see in what he is able to do this year as opposed to last? And also, you know, how much he is able to play?
We'll focus on this year, John. I just think that his leadership has improved. He's, you know, worked hard to become a leader of our football team, to know what to do and be able to disrupt the game. You know, understand how he fits, and he plays extremely hard. So, as good as he feels and where his conditioning level is, that's kind of how we try to play him.
Sure. I thought some of his comments after the game were pretty interesting in terms of the tipping that pass from Watson, that he was, you know, very prepared, recalled it from last year and saw some other things. Is that a strength for him too? Or does he do a lot of preparation, you know, particularly well for games?
I hope we all are.
You know, I mean, I guess in terms of film, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I hope we all are, you know, studying and preparing and trying to take the meetings onto the field and then ultimately into the game in those critical situations. And, you know, he's done a nice job of being able to try to get in the pocket. And when he doesn't, you know, try to get his hand up. And certainly was probably a game saving play for us. I think, you know, it would have been over had that ball gotten through.
Hey, Mike, what stands out about their wide receivers? They always seem to produce such great ones, and now Claypool being the latest, what stands out about them?
Well, I mean, they all are really good route runners. I think they're very well coached. You know, when you have the ability to get the football, I think they all are locked in and dialed in, because then – you know, distributes the ball to the guy that's open where the read takes them. And so I think that keeps everybody alive, that keeps them, you know, focused so that they can, you know, produce. And just when you may forget that they have a guy, then, you know, a guy like James Washington shows up huge last week, or, you know, then it's Claypool. And so we have to be prepared for everybody that's out there, all the way from, you know, Ebron, and they all have around 26 targets.
Hey, Mike, we talked a lot about the continuity from last year to this year. Ryan's ability to kind of pick up where he left off and maybe even do better. How impressed are you with his ability to do that? What's it say maybe about the offense overall?
We're five games in. We're early in the season. You know, we all have to continue to do more in practice and the meetings. And, you know, it's been, you know, we have high expectations here for everybody. And, you know, I know that there are some things that they want to continue to prove on, and hopefully they will. You know, I think that Ryan's continue to grow and grasp our offense and be able to communicate that as a quarterback to the players out on the field. I think that's really where things start to take off, is when, you know, players can communicate, you know, things that they're trying to get done on the field without the need of a coach, you know, because we're not out there on the field. And so I think that's one thing that Ryan's really done and has to continue to do is communicate what he's looking for in the passing game, and then, you know, continue to get us in the right place.
Are you beyond the point where conditioning can be a factor for anybody that's not been on IR or on the COVID list, for a Beasley, for a Clowney? Those guys beyond the point where conditioning can be a factor in anything that's going on with them?
I mean, conditioning is important for the entire football team. And, you know, based on, you know, the one thing that we have to be able to do is have to play with great effort and finish, and it starts with conditioning. It starts with an attitude throughout the entire football team. And so there's some guys that are able to condition throughout the week. There's some guys that aren't, you know, for various reasons. And so, you know, we'll keep trying to practice and keep trying to condition them early on the week. We just have had, I would say, a unique few weeks to where sometimes that may not have been an opportunity.
There you go. There's some of head coach Mike Vrabel today, and him speaking with the media, getting ready for the game against Pittsburgh on Sunday at Nissan Stadium. That 5-6 minutes that you just heard of Mike Vrabel is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. So what did you guys, any takeaways? Seemed like coach was a little bit shorter with his answers today and was probably – had other things on his mind rather than doing
prep day.
Zoom call. Yeah.
Prep day.
I was really looking for any insight on what to read into the Adoree Jackson roster move. Is it just a roster move, and this is more long-term? But in listening to his answer, I don't think you can completely rule him out for Sunday, right? If he were to have some great practices, is he a better option than some of the players that will be in there, knowing, that was another theme that we just heard, how diverse the Pittsburgh passing attack is? They spread the ball around a lot. He made it a point to say, what are the five guys that have at least 25 targets or whatever it was he threw out there. So I'm trying to figure out this move with Jackson. Does that mean this is just a start of, you know, this week it's practice and then it's maybe next week he's in, or is there a shot he's in on Sunday?
I think it's a long shot.
How do we really know? If he were to have some really good practices and he's a full participant, say Friday, then who knows, right?
Right.
We can't know one way or the other.
And that's a fair point, but it's also the first action that he's had this season. So I mean, he's, you know, you're just getting him on the practice field. That's the way the roster moves are set up. I mean, he doesn't even count against the roster. He's just able to practice. So you're right. He could blow him away, and maybe that's why he was so short. He wanted to go watch Adoree. He wanted to go see what he has in his corner to see if he's able to play. But I feel like it may be another week or so before he's actually playing. It's just my opinion.
That wouldn't surprise me, but I was just curious to see if he would have any clues. You know, yeah. Some coaches would come out and say, okay, this is the first step. He's not going to play this week. He's probably a week away. As we know, Mike Vrabel does not give out any more clues than he needs to.
I was just trying
to read into everything he was saying. He did not go as far as to say he's not going to play on Sunday.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering about that.
The way I look at it, too, is, you know, yes, and we've all said it, having Adoree Jackson back is going to be a huge help for this team. But if you watch him in practice and you go, all right, he could play. He could get in there and he could play. But if he practiced for one more week and he set out one more week, you know, does that help us even more long term? Even though you'd love to have him against Pittsburgh, just having one player back is not going to be, in my opinion, the difference in a win and a loss. So I think that he has to evaluate it just from that standpoint of, is it going to help them more if they wait a week or whatever to put him back in and not rush him?
Bottom line is, if he's ready to play, it doesn't matter. You play him. I mean, there's no easing in is ridiculous. If he's ready to play, he's ready to play. I mean, it's not like he's a rookie. It's his first game. Isaiah Wilson. I mean, Isaiah Wilson is a guy who's got no NFL experience. I mean, this is Adoree Jackson. If he can help you beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, Adoree Jackson needs to be in the lineup. There is no easing in the NFL. And as we've seen this year, you don't need, you know, all the notions that we thought you need to do this and you need to do that, whether it's preseason and two-a-days and training camps and all the stuff we've been accustomed to over the years. And, man, you have to practice all week. There's no way you could possibly play an NFL game. All that's been tossed out the window this year. This team basically didn't practice for 2 weeks and went out and beat an undefeated Buffalo Bills team and turned around in a short amount of time, turned around and beat the Houston Texans. So the guy's ready to play. You stick him in the lineup, period.
If he can help you win
to beat the Steelers. By the way, this game could mean something down the road. Now, I don't know if there's going to be home field advantage in the NFL in the playoffs in January or not. I don't know. But for seeding purposes, this may mean something.
You guys have just hit both sides of the argument. I tend to side with Darren that a guy who's played enough, if he is ready to go physically, if he's physically ready to go, maybe not 100% in condition, I would still try to work him in. I think he's a better option somewhere in your game plan. But that remains to be seen. This is another point I heard Mike Vrabel stress. A lot of people were saying, well, what about this point in the season? You're 5 and all this stuff. You can tell his message this week is, we haven't done anything yet. Right? You heard him say, the records don't mean anything. It's only 5 games into the season. He didn't come out and say it, but you can tell. This is what he's stressing to his team. You cannot get complacent because of what you've done five games in, that there's still a lot that you have to do to get where they want to go. I just think that's where he really thrives. I think he's really good at driving that message home to his team.
Well, it's pretty easy to do. They were 2-4 last year, and everybody thought they were dead, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody thought they were drowning, and they were taking in water, and they weren't going to be able to recover. And holy crap, you had the slogan, and you're 2-4, and you're not even going to make the playoffs. Good to great? Are you kidding me? You're going backwards. You're going the wrong way. And so there's, I mean, it's pretty easy to keep them with the right frame of mind because they were able to pull out of it and finish strong, and the rest is history. We know, right? The 2-4, you look dead. You look dead in the water. And, oh, by the way, they had some good opponents coming up, and they were able to have some crazy wins come out of them. So it's and it also helps to be playing a 5-0 team, right? I mean, if they're playing the Jets, I could see him really trying to stress that message, right?
Sure.
Hey, come off your mountain. Hey, I get it. You're undefeated. It's still the NFL. You better be ready to play or you're going to lose. Well, you know, if you don't have the team's focus against, you know, playing an undefeated team, you just heard Teresa right at the beginning of this, of the press conference. First question is, very few times this late in the NFL season has there ever been two undefeateds match up. So it doesn't happen very often. So if this doesn't get your team's attention, then, you know, you got big problems probably the remainder 11 games, because I would think you should have their attention. It should be easy to get up for this game.
But my point would be, I think there are certain coaches that are better at doing what you're saying, Darren, than there are others. You're right. It's easy to get your team up when you're playing a 5-0 team. But I think he's pretty consistent, and I think he excels at the mental part of the game, which is, well, I think,
agreed,
what we see with when we watch this team play. They're pretty mentally tough, pretty good at attention to detail. They've avoided, for the most part, games where they come out and play flat.
We'll come back, and there's some news on the LSU front. It looks like another dumb move by the NCAA. Another move, decision by the NCAA, where you shake your head and go, they just don't get it. At least that's my opinion. We'll come back and tell you what we're talking about to wrap up Wednesday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
But first, it is my time to tell you about BetMGM. It is coming soon to our state. For those of you that are like me, you like to dabble. You like the lines. You like the parlays. You like the over-unders. You like the prop bets. BetMGM is going to have you covered. They're the same people that they light up the Las Vegas Strip. If you've ever been to Vegas, you know about the MGM Grand. It's the same company. It's the same people. And now they're bringing this state-of-the-art app to our state where you can place your bets. Find out why BetMGM is the king of sportsbooks, with parlay bonus payouts, in-game wagering, boosted odds specials, daily promotions, and much more. Every time you make a wager, you earn credits in M-Life Rewards. That's the exclusive loyalty program of MGM Resorts. Can't beat that. You definitely want to have that. So every big game, every big play, they're going to be more than ever with BetMGM. Be among the first fans in the state to download the BetMGM sports app, coming soon to Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older. Must be present in Tennessee for problem gambling support. Call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Hit the road, Jack. Hey, if you or your kid is going to dress up as a Nashville Predator or a Titans player or an Asheville SC player or a sports star for Halloween, you can enter our ESPN The Game Nashville Sports Costume Contest. That's presented by Wilson County Hyundai at thegamenashville.com for a chance to win a $100 gift card to Nashville Underground. All you have to do is submit a picture of you or your kid in the sports costume, and you are entered for a chance to win. Contest will close Monday, November 2nd. Monday, November 2nd. Chase, I was going to help you with your BetMGM spot because I saw Darren Revelle tweet out during our show that someone on BetMGM yesterday won $129,000 off a $50 parlay last night.
Oh, my.
And the last thing they needed to hit was the Dodgers on the money line.
Wow. That's fantastic. Good for them.
$50 bet, $50 parlay won them $129,000.
I would put, now see, $50, you know, I say I like to dabble. I would put that in the dabbling category. You know, now Floyd Mayweather, that's not dabbling. He's doing more than dabbling. $50 on a parlay, that's a good dabble.
It was, I guess, six things, I think. Six team.
Yeah, but there must have been some for that payout to be high.
Right. There must have been some 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 team parlay.
And they just needed the Dodgers money line.
All they needed, the last thing they needed was the Dodgers on the money line. Can you imagine watching that game until the Dodgers broke it open, knowing that $129,000 are on the line for your $50 bet?
Oh, I'd be sick the whole time.
No kidding. I said LSU is self-imposing penalties. So I guess they're going to have a reduction of 8 scholarships and Odell Beckham Jr., the wide receiver for the Browns, LSU alum, has been banned from the facilities for 2 years, and that is for when he was handing out cash after the national championship game last year on the field. Now, I got to be honest.
Dumb.
By the way, one of the best tweets I saw in conjunction with this story that Ross Dellinger put out there, one of the best tweets, the follow-up to that was, yet, meanwhile, Will Wade is still employed by LSU.
Exactly. I had that thought, too. It's like, what? This isn't basketball? Like, I saw the story. I was like, I had to do a double take. LSU football, not LSU basketball?
So a reduction in scholarships in Odell Beckham cannot be, it can't be at the facilities for the next 2 years for throwing out cash on the field after they just won the national championship, after it was over. The college football season was over. They just won the national championship. What was he? He had like $100 bills, right?
I mean, it wasn't good. It wasn't good what he did. But put in perspective, let's say he had a wad of hundreds, and each player, let's just say each player, and I don't think this was the case, but each player got 200, even 300. And compare that to the story of Will Wade, where allegedly, you know, it looks pretty clear. There's been so many things. We're talking six figures that was thrown out there to a lot of players, right? Not a couple $100 bills.
Right.
Well, and it looked like he was just handing them to each player. They're probably, but the most anybody got was $100. Think about it.
I was going
to
say, if you got $300, you probably got more. You know, you got back in line a couple times. Hey, Odell.
Yeah. How you doing, man? But here's the problem. It was on national television, and everybody knew it was a vibe. It was awful. And he also said, did you guys see, as we wrap this up, Odell Beckham also said, not in an arrogant way, I just don't think COVID can get to me.
I saw that.
I don't think it's going to get into
my body. It's not going to get into my body.
Yeah.
Can't get into my body. It's just, I know. Just, it's Odell. Clearly, he's weird. He's extremely weird. We've heard a lot of other weird stories that we can't talk about on the air, but he's just a weird, weird cat. All right, that will do it for Wednesday's edition. Fun show. Fast-moving 4 hours. We'll try to duplicate it and do even better tomorrow. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.